Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning to you. 6:06, it's Kelly here, and man, that is what I would call a game last night, or last late afternoon. That was the Patriots versus the Seattle Seahawks, or as I prefer to call them, the Hood Rats. And it was everything that the game had promised to be, and it went down to basically almost the last play. New England jumped ahead, as has been the case in these games with Seattle. They fell behind, and then they ended up catching up and going ahead. And then it was, unbelievably, the Seahawks threw a goal line interception that sealed the deal for the Seahawks, or for the New England. And so now the GOAT conversations are out there, greatest of all time. And Tom Brady is right in the middle of it. He's been in six Super Bowls and he's won four of them. And to be totally honest, without that catch by David Tyree, he would have five. He'd have the most ever. Is he the best ever? Who knows? But the conversation's now out there. If he hadn't won this game, I don't know that it would have been. Anyway, today is the 2nd of February. And it's a little bit chilly out there. It's not too bad. And just trying to see what the temperature is for us out there. Trying to figure out how to use my new phone. Let's see here. I do like this phone a little bit better than my last one, but that's not saying much because the last one was a phone to make up for another phone that I broke, which was kind of an expensive phone. 35 degrees out and 60 the high, 35 the low. So anyway, without further ado, allow us to get into a little Super Bowl remembrance here. And it was that kind of a game. It went down to the very last play. I mean, that's all there is to it. And if they had not thrown that interception, you know, we wouldn't be having this conversation right now about the Patriots and the Seahawks. They looked somewhat dominated in the beginning. They looked dominated, but, you know, with the Seahawks, they're like a rattlesnake in the sense that even if you cut off the head, they can still bite you. And it games where it seems like Seattle is just completely out of the game, suddenly they wake up, and in this game there's this guy, Chris Matthews, who had never caught a pass in an NFL game before. He's a 6'6" receiver. He caught three passes for basically 109 yards. And, you know, it was just, I don't know, it was just an unbelievable set of events there. And I've got a little bit more for you. Now, there was a kind of an interesting play. There was this interception of Brady at the beginning of the game. And, you know, if you had seen this play, you wouldn't have believed at the very end of the play, it was a red zone interception. This guy, basically, it was a very poor pass by Brady. And when he gets the pass, this guy tries to run, you know, obviously tries to run it out of the end zone and or from the like the 1 yard line, and he ends up somehow breaking his arm in a way that it made it look like Gumby, showing him at the ground with his arm on the ball, or it was kind of you couldn't really tell from the game itself, but the replay was kind of disgusting. All right, here's a little bit more from Trent Dilfer. These clips are from ESPN. And we're talking about that last play. Okay, so what happens is it's basically down to the about the last 3 minutes, and Seattle has got this you know, chance to go down, but they've got to score a touchdown. It can't just be a field goal. They're four down. So they throw the ball. It's kind of a jump ball to Jerome Kearse and this guy Butler. Butler tips the ball. He and Kearse fall down, but the ball comes down and hits Kearse on the thigh and then pops up in the air and hits Kearse again. It basically bounces around on top of him, and he ends up catching it. It's probably the greatest Super Bowl catch you'll ever see. And so they're about on the maybe on the 4 yard line, 5 yard line. So they start giving the ball to Lynch. It's fantastic running back. All right, the next play, they throw the ball to this guy Lockett, and it gets picked off, and that was the play of the game. So here they're recounting that. All right, so let's take a little break here. I thought we'd listen to some indie rock this month. Here's Bon Iver, a song called Holocene. They're very highly rated by the critics and have a great sound. 617 Kelly O'Connell, the 17th, or pardon me, it's 617. It's the 2nd of February. 523-1450 to call in, 805-6180 to text. I got to go grab the texter out of the car. But here we go, a little Bone. I don't know if it's Bon or Bone. I think it's B-O-N. As long as it's not John Boner, I'll be happier. Anyway, we'll take a break, and we'll be right back. Kelly here, and good morning to you. Discussing the Super Bowl, and looks like we got a caller here. So why did Pete Carroll call this play? It's inexplicable. It is being referred to as the worst decision in Super Bowl history. And thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Good morning. This is Antonio.
Antonio, God bless you. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing good, thanks to the Mighty One. How are you?
Unbelievably well. Just like you. So what's our topic?
I just wanted to give God's blessing and give honors to the governor of Texas, Governor Abbott. Because he declared today as Chris Kyle Memorial Day, or to remember him today. And Chris Kyle is a real American hero. And I thank God that he was willing to lay down his life for this country, for the Constitution, that we would have the freedom to worship the way we want, and that we could make comments as freely as we want. And so praise God for that. And my second thing that I wanted to tell you is my son, Larry, my youngest son, he just got sworn in for the Navy, and he's going to leave on June 30th, right out of high school, 18 years old. And, you know, they actually they have a creed that they will protect this country and our Constitution. So the Navy has a really high standard of teaching these boys not to lie and defend their country at all costs. So I'm proud of my son.
Wow, congratulations. And where's your son going to be sent?
He has a date. He graduates in May, and then on June 30th, he'll be leaving to Chicago.
And does he know where he's going to end up?
Not yet. Well, after the boot camp, he'll go to Florida for 3 months, and then I guess he has to choose where he'll go then and what ship he'll be on.
Oh, congratulations, Antonio.
Yeah, it's his goal, and we just want to support. You know, since he was a little boy, he said he wanted to go in the Navy. So thank God that this young man set a goal, and by God's favor that he's fulfilling his goal, and he hasn't been involved with gangs, drugs, or sex.
Oh, that's phenomenal. He is probably getting sick of the desert.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a real good boy. He helps me a lot. We've got this little farm, and he helps me at home a lot. And then our youngest daughter, remember Hadassah, the mariachi
yes.
singer?
Yes.
She's at early college. She'll graduate with a diploma and then an associate's degree. But she's in the Excel program working at Memorial Hospital shadowing doctors, and she's in the ICU unit, and she's 17 years old, and she wants to be a nurse in the military.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, Tony, I've got another call here. Anything else?
No, that's it. You have a good day. Me and my family love you, and keep the good work up. We love you. God bless you.
Thanks a lot, Antonio. You likewise. You called the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Yeah, this is Tom.
Tom, good morning to you. What's going on?
Your call screener, I love your new call screener there. He's got a very relaxing tone of voice.
Hey, well, I kidnapped him from a Filipino call center.
Hey, who was that girl, that chick during the halftime there?
Oh, that was Katy Perry. Her parents were missionaries, believe it or not. Or I think her dad's a pastor. And boy, she. What do you think of her?
Oh, she's cute. I was waiting for some sort of a malfunction when she got on that shooting star.
That was a lawyer's fantasy if she'd have fallen off that thing head first.
And who was the gangster rapper girl that was with her there?
That was Missy Elliott. She looked like, to me, Super Mario.
All right, Kelly, I'll let you go on.
Thanks a lot, man. Bye-bye. Didn't she look like Super Mario in that outfit? It was kind of a square, almost a Chairman Mao outfit. All right. Here is an explanation as to, folks, you're free to call in and change the subject if you need to. We're going to go on a little bit more on this Super Bowl thing. Why did Pete Carroll, known to be one of the most innovative coaches or smartest coaches in college or the pros, and I think he won some championships at USC. He's won a championship at Seattle. He's not going to go down as a bad coach, but why that particular call at the goal line when they've got this extremely – you know what? Marshawn Lynch is like a fish. He's like one of these very active, he's like trying to think of a fish that fights harder when it's in the boat than when it's out of the boat. But this guy, you go to tackle him and he always manages to squirm forward for a couple of yards and they're just on the goal line there. So why wouldn't they hand the ball to him? And here's the explanation. I guess you throw it to waste so you don't waste the down. And we got a phone call here. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this? Hello. I guess the call screener grabbed him. What this call screener doesn't realize is he needs to come back to the studio here with his info. All right. So here is this guy, Butler. Now, Butler is the guy that grabbed the ball. He made a very interesting comment, and this is from SI. It's a Sports Illustrated, but let me get it is the great temptation screeners to have a conversation with the caller when they call it. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
This is Ted.
Ted, call.
Yeah.
What's going on?
I just wanted to say that Wikipedia says Marshawn Lynch weighs 215 pounds, stands 5'11". It just goes to show that it's the size of the fight in the dog, not the dog in the size of the dog in the fight.
Well, that's true. Do you accept my change of the name from Seahawks to Hood Rats?
Oh, I guess so. Hey, thanks a lot, Kelly.
Thanks, Ted. Have a great day. Thanks for the call.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, Marshawn Lynch is, I don't know if I've ever seen a running back like this guy before. He acts like he's in a brawl outside of a bar for his life. And he is just pounding away. You can't tackle this. No one person can't tackle this guy. They get a hold of him and he kind of, and he's not really even a spinner. I don't know why they said it's because his leg, he must be bow-legged because his legs are so wide apart that he can change. He's like a goat. He could change direction at a moment's notice. And I do, I think it's, well, I won't criticize the guy because they just lost, but that team comes across a little bit ragged, but it may be the greatest defense that you or I have ever seen. Now, here is what Butler said. I think this guy must be Pentecostal because he had a vision. He had a vision that he was All right, so he had said something along the lines. I don't know if it was like a dream or if he was sitting at the sitting on the bench and maybe I don't know, maybe had something erupt in front of him. But all right, here is a little interview with Tom Brady. Are you the greatest ever? Are you the GOAT? Are you the greatest ever? Here's Brady's reply. Humble without being too humble, if you know what I mean. I hate to say this, but it was Malcolm in the Middle. All right. So could you imagine if somebody came up and said, Tom, people say you're the most handsome guy in America. And he'd say, well, no, come on. There's a lot of handsome guys out there. And I got to thank my mom for taking care of herself during my pregnancy, all this business. So anyway, here we go. Here is a little more Bon Iver. Wouldn't it be a terrible name for a band, the Boner Johns? Well, anyway, here we go. That's a pun on John Boner, John Bain, or whatever his name is. Here we go. Bon Iver, Holocene. This band has an absolutely unique sound. They were considered to be kind of the best indie band to come out of 2011, 2012, and kind of very memorable stuff. Kelly O'Connell, it's 6:35, and we will be right back. 523-1450 to call in. Yeah, I don't care if you celebrate the Patriots or if you lament the Seattle Pit Bulldogs, but we'll be right back. It's Kelly here, and you kind of wonder how much money was put on that game. And they had said before the game was played that it could be the most watched event in the history of television, the most watched show. I don't know if there's anything to that. But, that was a great game. There was just something about that way that game played out that was and I think it's these kind of amazing plays. You know, Brady gets picked off early, and you think that, well, it could be a bad, you know, you don't know how Brady he's older. He's not probably the quarterback he was 5 years ago. And, you know, is he going to have a bad game? But Brady, you don't ever really see the guy panic, you know. And then I don't think that in the first quarter that this guy Wilson had I don't think he had a completion. And it's one of these typical Seattle games where you're kind of waiting for them to get on track, and you know they will. The game is for them is kind of based on, you know, Marshawn Lynch. This guy is just a phenomenal running back. And he's so, you know what it is, he's disrespectful. I wasn't going to say anything negative about him, but, you know, they come up to him and ask him. He's a smart aleck, and he acts like he just came out of the hood. He just moved here from Compton. And I think I fault the commissioner for allowing him to do that. I mean, I think that if there are people making a living, you know, sports journalists or whatever, who are trying to interview this guy after the game, it's this giant thing, the NFL, and you got one person who's not cooperating like a smart aleck. He should be fined for that, because these people are making a living. Individuals out there that support the games, that come to the games, that buy the merchandise, watch it on cable. These people should be respected a little bit. This is how these guys are making their millions of dollars a year. And I just think that this Marshawn Lynch really comes across like an idiot, but you cannot fault his play as a football player. It's just extraordinary. Now let's try to think if there was anything else about the game. Just when this guy broke his wrist, it was maybe about 6 inches up his wrist. I don't know how he snapped it, but there's a picture of him going down to the ground, and he's got his arm out, and his arm is bent like Gumby. And so that, of course, affected the Seahawks. And I'm just trying to see if I can get another clip of this. I just found it interesting when he came up after the game and said, I had a vision. It would just really sounded kind of almost religious that he'd had, you know. So, all right. So Brady is named the MVP. The Seahawks lose by 4. There's a fist fight. Seattle starts a couple of fist fights at the end of the game. Fans do blast the coach as making the worst play in history. And the weird thing is that Carroll seemed to, I don't know. I mean, Carroll has just made a lot of right calls. He's gotten very lucky. They were lucky to come back in the game with against the Green Bay Packers. Was it just a collapse of coaching on the Packers side, of course? All right, so this is from CBS Seattle. Carroll, Seahawks make, quote, worst call in Super Bowl history. Here's this little statement here. While the claim might sound hyperbolic or over the top, it could be accurate. The Seahawks' bizarre decision to throw the ball at the one-yard line and not hand off to Marshawn Lynch, one of the most physically imposing running backs in football, will certainly be scrutinized for a very, very long time. Thanks to the social media, it has already happened. Deion Sanders, the epic football player, that was the worst call in the history of the Super Bowl. Worst QB decision ever, ever. Ever. Emmett Smith, that was the worst play call I've seen in the history of football. Emoticon, anti-smiley. Emoticons are those little things you put into your messages, smile, frown, you know. Sidney Rice, football player. Second and goal from 1 yard line, one timeout in beast mode in the backfield. I would not have thrown that ball to Jerry Rice even. Jacoby Ellsbury, the almost famous outfielder for the Yankees was got into the majors through Boston Red Sox. Hats off to the Seahawks. How do you not give the ball to Lynch? The Seahawks. Anyway, all right. So you get it. All right. So there's a lot of anger out there. All right, so I got some weather for you. It's about, maybe 35 degrees out there. It's getting warmer. Kelly O'Connell, 642-523-1450 to call in. 805-610-80. Talk real slow to my call screener. He is fresh from the Philippines. We'll be right back. 642 KOBE Las Cruces. It's Kelly here at 645-523-1450 to call in. And here is just what this guy said, Butler, said about the vision. I find it kind of interesting. I wish I could hear more what he was talking about, but check this out. The Super Bowl, this guy that made the interception at the goal line and ended the hopes of the Seattle Hood Dogs. A hood rat is a female, so I gotta adapt it a little there. Well, and what he said was that he was the guy that knocked the ball out of the hand of the receiver when the ball came down and then hit the guy on the thigh, and then it bounced up. This is this guy Jermaine Kearse. And so Kearse then intercepted, or not, he caught it. He's laying on the ground. The ball's kind of bouncing around on top of him, and then he grabs it. It's a reception, but when you see the play, it looks like it's been a good defense. I mean, you can't imagine the guy's laying on the ground catching the ball, you know? And so this kid said that he felt bad about that. And there was a little bit of contact on the goal line. It was just a superb interception. It wasn't really a bad pass. It was just the guy was there at the right time. But anyway, I was just curious what his vision was. All right, here's some of your let me get you some of your headlines here. Super Bowl, Patriots win thriller. San Francisco experiences driest January on record with no measurable rainfall. School district may screen students for depression, anxiety in classroom. 3-year-old shoots both parents. Wow. Michelle Obama gets a rebuke. South Carolina partially lifts junk food ban. Listen, it doesn't matter how healthy the food is if the kids won't eat it. I mean, that's just bottom line. Eurozone alarm grows over Greek brinksmanship. Okay, you've got a number of these countries in Europe that are going through austerity, meaning they're having to cut back on their spending. The EU is kind of forcing them to, because they're in default, Spain and Greece, and it's really caused the EU to fall apart. And so now you've got these socialist leaders that are being elected, and they're being elected because people cannot stand going through this austerity. I mean, it's just absolutely crazy. It's a time in the history of Europe when they were hoping that they would get, you know, some sort of a, they would be like America. And what they found out is that the countries there are too diverse. And so they can't really be like America because they didn't start out like we did. All right. Michelangelo's lost bronzes have been discovered. The Queen of England is giving up her corgi dogs. Goats are offered as a solution to clear Colorado areas exposed to plutonium. That's what we need, is radioactive goats running around. Relationship between Obama and Netanyahu worsens, if that's possible. Europe's Jews wonder if it's time to flee again. They're getting just threatened. Jewish frat house tagged with swastikas in California. They say anti-Semitism is growing around the world. Ahmadinejad plans to return in Iran. Ahmadinejad, or however you pronounce that guy's name. Man arrested after climbing bike rack outside of White House. Oh, he's got some weird attack going on there. Here is a little James Connolly stand-up. This is good. This guy's good. At least he's clean. It is Kelly here, 654. Here's another. I missed this, but Super Bowl. Scientology ad promises the age of answers. That is scary. If you want to get into something interesting, I think it's called Operation Clam Bake. It's this giant website that's devoted to the history of Scientology. Scientology is this religion started by this. It is a space religion comes from a science fiction author, believe it or not. They say that the drop in gas prices is coming to an end. So we got down to the 140s. It's now going back up to the 150s. I don't know how they know that, since they've said that the gasoline or the oil could still go down to $20-$25 a barrel. What Antonio was talking about, Governor Abbott declares February 2nd Chris Kyle Day in Texas, and this is from the movie American Sniper. All right, so this is the story of the American Sniper. Now, there is an extraordinary amount of stuff, criticism out there about the American Sniper, the movie, and people like Michael Moore and Seth Rogen, who, I don't know. I mean, I think wasn't Seth Rogen in that, the conversation, this stupid comedy about North Korea? But, you know, it's funny that the left did not hesitate to go after this guy. And remember that for the average person, you're just reacting to stuff out of your gut. You know, you hear about this movie, you go see it, you like it. Most people like it, maybe some don't, but it's not really a pro-war movie. It's just kind of the experience of this guy. And I would describe it as kind of a love story of this guy that he had for his fellow army men and his fellow military people that he was over there shooting, other people trying to kill Americans. At the same time, though, the left comes out with this stuff to discredit him. He was a terrible person. He was racist. He was I've got this one clip in which this guy from CNN, I think it was CNN, is saying that he was a psychopath, or he went on killing sprees or whatever. And they've got to attack this guy because he represents some support for the military and traditional American values, and the left is disquieted when they see the amount of support for this guy out there. It's unnerving to them because, and they say, and I've got a couple of great stories. I want to do some more of this interview with Steve Pierce, but they've got this debate now over political correctness. I'm going to tell you about it's erupted in the left, and it's absolutely astounding what's going on. The left is fighting amongst itself over political correctness. Here, I'll take you out some Bon Iver. Holocene, Kelly O'Connell, 6:59 on the button. We'll be back after a break on the hour. Good morning. It's Kelly. It is Kelly at 7:06, and just had a conversation with the call screener. When you don't have a call screener, you're just talking to me. But when there's a call screener, you know, you call in and the person, Bill, says good morning and how's it going, and just tell them your topic. Don't launch into your story because we want to hear your story or your point or your criticism or your whatever it is on the air. So just to let you know, now that I'm not screening my own calls, it's slightly different. All right, so here's some more headlines for you. Washington Post going after Rand Paul, attacking him, claiming he started his own board of ophthalmology to certify himself. Scott Walker surging in Iowa. Would you vote for a person for president who did not have a college degree? Now, let me turn this around to you. Isn't a great deal of the number of problems that we've had with past presidents due to the fact that they have been to the university and have become radicalized? Isn't the president that we're dealing with now radicalized? And isn't that to some extent due to his college education? Maybe the only thing that we should think about is a non-educated, you know, non-college educated person who's just got real life experience. Do you like Scott Walker? 523-1450. They say Chris Christie is the most formidable fundraiser out there. Marco Rubio plotting his path to victory. Mike Huckabee comparing gay marriage to alcohol profanity. Well, good thing that the gay evangelist Bill McCamley isn't here. He would flip out. He'd end up on the ground sucking his thumb so fast. All right, so Obama won't choose between Clinton or Biden. He loves them both. Probably thinks it's two people that both make him look good. We're awaiting new federal rules on the internet. Isn't that scary? A study blames Craigslist for rise in HIV infections. A study says smartphones, iPads hurt toddlers' ability to learn and socialize. And all right, so here is the little bit on this debate over the American sniper. Here's from Fox News. Interesting conversation from Michelle Obama, who says that she defends the movie, and she says, you know, from what I've heard from the families of service people and the people that have come back from the war zones, this movie is very accurate in how it portrays PTSD and post-war experiences. So I thought that was kind of interesting that the president, you know, maybe the movie's too big. The president feels like he needs to give a thumbs up to it. And what do you, if have you seen it? 523-1450. And I, you know, there was this sense when The Passion of the Christ was out that people were kind of pushing back against Hollywood by going to see the movie because the movie, you know, let's face it, most of these movies out there, many of them are entertaining, but think about how many movies that come out of Hollywood has a great deal of self-respect and love for itself. How many of these movies, though, are these blockbusters, are these fantasy, you know, what's the Green Hornet or the Superman or the Spider-Man, whatever. so many of the heroes in these movies are individuals that no one can really identify with. You've got real life hero stories that are not being told by Hollywood, many of them being censored, I would think, because they are like this movie here. They don't fit into the kind of left's view that the world is trash. Life is bad. We have to, shine a light on the evil deeds of people. And there's all kinds of crazy stories out there that come out of Hollywood that are really, if you take away the acting talent and the whatever genius of production, the movies, the storylines of these movies, a lot of times are almost inexplicable to understand. All right, I've got a little bit of Bon Iver here. A little bit more for you. Here's Holocene, a little more. Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450. Got to go grab my texter to see what people are texting in. So we'll be right back. Great band, Bon Iver. And they're from, I think, from Eau Claire, Wisconsin. 716-523-1450 to call in on KOBE Las Cruces at 716. As I say, we'll be right back. It's Kelly here. Good morning to you. It is 7:21, and I've got a. I don't know if you heard this. I don't really see it in the news right now, but the daughter of. I don't know why it's not on the front page, but the daughter of Whitney Houston was found unresponsive. In other words, she was found passed out in a bathtub. And they say that I think that it sounded like that she had maybe could be I don't know if it was an overdose or I don't know what happened, But U.S. Weekly says Bobby Christina still alive. Still alive, but no drugs found out in the open by police. But they think what may have happened is that she had overdosed and then drowned in the tub. And when they pulled her out, they started working doing a CPR on her. And so I think she's alive, but there's diminished brain activity. And from People magazine, they say she's found unconscious in her bathtub on Saturday. She's been in intensive care in a Georgia hospital, breathing with the aid of ventilators, relatives gathering by her side. 21-year-old daughter of Whitney Houston has very little brain activity, and her loved ones are praying and hoping for the best. The neurologist Eli Zimmerman of Massachusetts General Hospital says her prognosis will depend on how much oxygen her brain was getting before Brown was found breathing. Even minutes without air can be grim. And they say patients whose brains have been deprived of oxygen are typically sedated and often kept on medications that slow down brain activity. So anyway, I'm going to guess that she is not really going to come out of this coma. Impression that she is dead, basically brain dead, from what I understand, or very close to it. And I've got a story for you that I thought you might find a little bit notable. It is, I'm just looking at the Sun News though right now to see what stories are out there. Work continuing on monument to honor Vietnam veterans. NMSU astronomers contribute to massive star database. There's some nice telescopes in this state, as I'm sure that you're aware. And I don't see anything that you couldn't live without knowing here. All right, so, and I'm looking for New Mexico news here. Don't see a whole lot. Balloon pilots celebrating in New Mexico. They had a trans-Pacific flight, 15 years in the making, and came down in New Mexico. And New Mexico toddler shoots father, pregnant mother. That's where the little kid that shot mom and dad was located. That's a bizarre story. Let me get that here for you. And, all right, so I'll have that here for a second, but, probably not too typical for a 3-year-old to take out both parents with a shot. I've got this story for you when we get done with this, that is about possibly the fall of political correctness. I don't really know for sure. Couldn't really say, but it seems to me like the best thing that you could ever have happen is to get rid of political correctness. It's a false standard. It came out of a Marxist laboratory, so to speak. And if you got rid of it, the country would be a lot better off. I'm going to wait for this story to queue up. It's off of KOB if we can get it to play. But anyway, political correctness as a theory is a failed theory, of course. Failed because it comes up with a standard that you'd have to be an academic or a Marxist to have any sympathy for, but a lot of people have been kind of sensitized to follow it. All right, here is a father shot by 3-year-old son. All of a sudden we heard a gun go off and then comes out. Here's from Albuquerque. All right, so there was a story that came out from a writer by the name of Jonathan Chait, and if you're, you know, into these, if you follow national politics, if you follow the commentators, Jonathan Chait is pretty liberal. Pretty liberal. He's written a few things that I've agreed with, but for the most part, I disagree with his ideas. He wrote an article called Not a Very PC Thing to Say, How the Language Police Are Perverting Liberalism. And let me go to a break here But first, let me just say that, you know, this guy is basically kind of he's kind of documenting how political correctness has taken over. Has taken over the left in such a way, and it really becomes bizarre when you get right down into it. And this is, this article is pages long. It must be 5 or 10 pages. It's hard to tell on the internet, but it's from the New York Magazine, I think. Yeah, New York News. The NewYorkMag.com, if you want to look it up. The title, not a very PC thing to say, but it's really, the left has only themselves to blame for political correctness. It's a left idea that you are going to decide what other people's, what their values are. Outside of whatever the laws and standards of politeness are in the country, you're going to go further and tell people you have to support feminism. You have to support gay rights and gay marriage. You have to, because if you don't, we're going to push you out of society. You could be driven out of your job for saying the wrong thing, even if you don't mean it. Here's the strangest thing about political correctness. It doesn't matter if you mean, you could say something accidentally or without thinking, without having any intent to be racist. I mean, we as a country are polite. We as a country are not, I mean, there's racism in every country, but I don't think that this country, to the extent that we're racist, it's not something that we celebrate. It's something that we're opposed to. And nonetheless, there's no end to the nitpicking and navel-gazing of these people. And it is just a very strange thing that they've gotten so much traction in this society. Let's take a break, 523-1450. I've got a little bit more James Connolly, a little levity before we dive into the disgusting world of political correctness. Here's a little more stand-up from this guy. A little anti-PC comedy to prime the pump. 733 Kelly Connell, 523-1450. We'll be right back. It's Kelly here, and I'm not sure we're going to get to the Steve Pierce thing, but it's okay. I'll just save it for tomorrow. But, all right, so there's a battle in the left. Now, what has happened here is when they say, when you talk about sports, there's a famous saying, winning cures everything, meaning every problem that afflicts a team is cured by winning. In the same way in politics, if you're in power, you can deal with the dissent because there's power to pass around, you know, and there's the job of governing. In this case, the president's party is out of power. The left, and most people understand that it's the far left that is had a lot of control on this White House. The academic left within the academy, you've got some very bizarre arguments going on that when you hear them in person, when you're face-to-face with them, they strike you as so strange, and yet people are willing to live and die for this stuff. Here's a little bit from Fox News again on one of the weird things that have happened recently on a campus in New York. When you hear that, there's a lot more to this clip, but I'm going to let it go there. When you hear that, you understand how crazy political correctness is. It is a machine that really destroys all of our social connections and tries to refabricate them. And in doing so, it creates a lot of confusion and these false standards. And so one of the things that was talked about in these articles, and the reason I'm bringing this up is because it's not really about the academy, about the universities. It is about real life and how these standards are pressed into the media, they're pressed into Hollywood, they're in the political system, and the rest of us have to take note and try to survive because these false standards are out there. When I say they're false, they're not really based on a genuine history of our people, and they're not based on a genuine understanding or sympathy for the human race and the difficulties in getting along between the different races and genders and ages and stuff. It is completely contrived. Now, I find it hilarious that there is this debate. They're talking about this, and the number to call in 523-1450. There's this debate that is happening within these feminist groups, and these basically, because these people are out of power now, they have to look for reasons. You know, they have to look for their reasoning. And there's this really great article from the New York Times. This guy that I think is an underrated writer, Ross Douthat. He's explaining why he thinks it's happening. He's saying it's because the left never established or never achieved what they wanted to when they were in power, and so now they have to go at it from another way. But the way they're doing it is cannibalizing other leftists. But here's my concern. Here is a real world application of it. You'll immediately recognize it. And this is from Red Eye. I'm not trying to play a bunch of Fox clips today, but these just happen to be on here. All right. So my problem with this is that it's affecting public policy. It's affecting our foreign policy because we can't even call the, you know, what it is. We can't call, you know, the. I'm absolutely astounded that when the White House tries to make a differentiate between terrorism and the problem here is that although people who have spent a lot of time in the university system might be able to pull this off, as debilitating as it is for the country, you're trained in the university to have this super sensitivity about all this garbage. But for the country, for the average person, it is so destructive to not be able to call someone like the Fort Hood shooter a Muslim terrorist. He's running around screaming Allah Akbar and shooting people, but we can't, you know, in the same way we can't go after ISIS in the way we should because of all of this hair splitting. Anyway, we'll take a break here. Here's a little more Bon Iver, Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450. 805-6180 to text. I'll read your text in a minute. It's Kelly here, and I'm kind of digging down into this, tapping down into this debate. It comes out of political correctness. Now, this, you can't ever be, you know, sensitive enough in life. You know, you can always offend somebody. Jonathan Chait, in this very long article, says that it is true that liberals and leftists want to make society more economically and socially egalitarian. In other words, they want to make the society more fair and more. But liberals hold to the classic Enlightenment tradition that says that I disagree with what you're saying, but I defend your right to say it to the death. Now, this is a quote from him. The Marxist left has always dismissed liberalism's commitment to protecting the rights of its political opponents as hopelessly naive. If you maintain equal political rights for the oppressive capitalists and their proletarian victims, this will simply keep in place society's unequal power relations. Why respect the rights of the class whose power you're trying to smash? And so, according to Marxist thinking, your political rights depend entirely on what class you belong to. All right. So the modern left has borrowed this Marxist position on liberalism and substituted, instead of capitalistic or social class, they put in race and gender. And so anyway, and I find it absolutely fascinating that this guy who's a real lion of leftism is attacking political correctness. Now, here is the problem with political correctness once you apply it to foreign policy. Do you think that the Muslims care, the Muslim radicals overseas care PC? They've got to be laughing their rear ends off when they hear these debates. But here you go. They're trying to do whatever they can to kill us overseas and in our country, and we're debating whether we can call them terrorists. Crazy, right? Policy, it's foreign policy. There's a group of people sweeping across the Middle East. They're trying to kill, convert, or kill every man, woman, and child who's not Muslim. And we're debating whether they're terrorists or ISIS versus Taliban versus Al-Qaeda. It's absolute madness. We'll take a break here and be right back to finish this topic up. Kelly O'Connell, 5-2-3-14-50. It's Kelly here, and here is some of the things that caused. Here's one of the clips. Let me see. By the way, I've got some text here. Considering the ferocity and barbarism with which our Islamic extremist enemies are pushing their influence all over the Middle East and other parts of the world, I think I'll throw my sentiments and money on heroes like the likes of Chris Kyle and films based on stories like his rather than the comic actors like Seth Rogen. That's not to say I don't love the work of good comedians. All right. Here is a little bit from the White House. It caused a lot of confusion when it was heard, but it's to be expected. Listen to how he pronounces it. This is one of the affectations of the far left. They will pronounce words differently to show you that they have real knowledge. For instance, how the president pronounces Pakistan. Like if I know how to pronounce the name of the country, therefore, I really know what I'm talking about, you know? All right. My Blog Talk Radio, by the way, go to Blog Talk Radio to get a repeat of the show or listen to it live. Now, here is a little bit on this debate between Jonathan Chait in the left, the rest of the left. Majority Report.